We're doing the book of Shmuel. It's a new semester. We had learned about the great man Korach, who had a vision that he was going to be greater than Moshe and Aharon. And he made a mistake. He didn't realize that it was his descendant, Shmuel, who would be that great. And so Korach, in this vision misled him, and that's why he went out against Moshe Rabbeinu. And we know that Korach went down, excuse the pun, and that his children made it. We have psalms from his children. His children speak about a great future, if you look at the songs and psalms of Bnei Korach. And from his children came out a great leader of the Jewish people, a prophet named Elkanah. Elkanah had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Hannah was barren, Peninnah had children. Peninnah would torment Hannah, and Hannah prayed, and finally her prayers were answered, and she had a great son, Shmuel. She had taken a vow that if Hashem grants her her wish of having a child, she would bring that child up to the temple to be raised by the Kohanim. Her husband was a Levite. And she kept her vow. When Shmuel was 2 years old, they brought him up to the temple. He was a child prodigy. He knew Tanakh real well. And he was already giving halachic ruling when they brought him up to the temple. And Eli trained him. We learned about how Eli's children were sinful, and they were focused on enjoying their role as the priests of the Jewish people, and so they ruined the reputation of the priesthood and the temple. People would look down at it. I have to go up to the temple to bring sacrifices, where the Kohanim are so into eating fresh meat, and they abused their powers. And although Eli rebuked them, he did not rebuke them enough, and he wasn't harsh enough in his rebuke. And so, where we left off, Shmuel has a great reputation, and Eli's children have a horrible reputation. And Eli is lying down, and he's become a very old man, and he doesn't see well. And Shmuel is lying in his post. And the term over here is the candle of Hashem, the lamp of Hashem, has not yet gone out as Shmuel was lying down. So the simple reading of the verse would indicate that the candles that were lit, the lamp that was lit in the menorah, was not yet out. But our sages say that this pasuk indicates the way Hashem takes care of the Jewish people, that the lamp represents the leadership of the Jewish people. The leadership of the Jewish people was not extinguished. Eli had not yet passed away. And here Hashem is about to appear to Shmuel. So as Shmuel lies down, Hashem appears and calls Shmuel. And often when Hashem appears to a person, Hashem first appears with a voice that is familiar to the person so they won't get scared. When Moshe was out in the desert and Hashem appeared in the burning bush, Hashem appeared in the voice of Moshe's father. Moshe thought he heard his father, Amram. He turned around and looked for his father until finally Hashem says, "No, it's me. I'm the God of your father." So Moshe got all excited. "Oh, my father is like one of the patriarchs." Hashem says, "I'm the God of your father." And then Hashem says, no, "I'm the God of Amram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Your father is a great man, but he's not one of the patriarchs." Shmuel is lying down, and the one who is his prime educator at this time is Eli. So he hears Hashem appear in the voice of Eli. And he runs out to Eli, and he says, "I'm here, you called me." And Eli says, "No, I didn't call you, go back, lie down." And this happens a second time, and again he comes, and it happens a third time. And this time Eli figures out, this must be Hashem who's going to give his first prophetic vision to Shmuel. So Eli tells Shmuel, "Go lie down, and when you hear the voice again, say, 'Speak Hashem, for your servant is listening.'" So he lies down and he says to himself, "Maybe someone's tricking me. Who said it's Hashem?" So the next time he hears Hashem, he hears Shmuel, Shmuel. Hashem calls out to him lovingly and he says, "Speak, for your servant is listening." He doesn't say, "Speak Hashem," because he's not yet confident. And then Hashem gives him his first prophetic vision. Now, when Hashem comes to give Shmuel prophecy, the term is Vayavo Hashem Vayityatzav. Vayityatzav could mean Hashem took a stance, Hashem stood. Wherever you see the root Yatziv in Tanakh, the word Yatziv is synonymous with Emet. Right? We say it after Shema. Emet Vayatziv. Yes? Yatziv is a complementary to Emet. So the term Yatziv, Yatzav, Hityatzev, is very often a code in Tanakh to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It says that when Moshe was placed in the water, his sister came and stood behind him. Vateitatzav achoto merachok. Our sages say it wasn't his sister, it was the Shekhinah standing there behind him, keeping an eye on what would happen with Moshe. So Vateitatzav over there is the root Yetziv, and you'll see it in other places as well. So this is one of the sources. Lo'olam Hashem devarecha nitzav b'shamayim. The word of Hashem is described as nitzav. Man is dynamic. Hashem is constant. So Hashem is described as yetziv. In modern Hebrew, yetziv means stable. So Hashem tells Shmuel, what I'm about to do will cause every person who hears it to have his ears ring, and then I will punish Eli the way I promised him, and I'll teach him that I'm punishing his family because he hasn't properly rebuked his children, even though he knew that his children are blaspheming with their behavior. And so I promise that I won't forgive the sins of the house of Eli with a sacrifice. And even though that sounds like Hashem is punishing them, within the punishment is the hope, is the light, because Hashem says, I will not forgive them with a sacrifice. And that is an indicator that Hashem is saying the sacrifices cannot bring atonement for them because they sinned with the sacrifices. If they want atonement, they have to do Torah, they have to do kindness with their fellow man. But using the sacrifices as atonement won't work because they use the sacrifices for the sin. So Shmuel doesn't want to go and tell Eli. And so Shmuel stays lying and he's scared. And Eli calls him in and he says, Shmuel, my son. And Shmuel says, here I am. And they both know the elephant in the room. Like, what was that prophecy, son? And then Shmuel is obviously avoiding telling him. So he asks him, what did Hashem tell you? And Shmuel is hesitant. And he says, don't hide anything from me. And Shmuel is still hesitant. And then he says, well, so Hashem should do and continue if you hide anything from me. And he's basically telling him, I understand you're about to tell me something bad. Well, it should be to you if you don't tell me. And that curse came true. Just as Eli's children did not go in his footsteps and they were not fit to take over his leadership, the same happened to Shmuel. His children do not go in his footsteps, and that will ultimately be the catalyst for the Jewish people asking for a king, because they will be fed up with Shmuel's children who will not go in his footsteps. So Shmuel tells him everything, and Eli in his piety says, Hashem hu, Hashem is the merciful one, he controls the world. Hatov mein avi aseh, he should do whatever is good in his eyes. Hashem should help us work it out for good. And that's a rule in life. Whenever there's a decree from heaven, a person has to pray it should play itself out for good. A decree is a decree. But we can still pray that it plays out for good. So Shmuel starts prophesying and everyone hears about him throughout Israel from the north to the south. And we have a rule that when the Shekhinah comes down, so very often it affects more than one person. It's as though the Shekhinah spreads. So just like when Moshe gets prophecy, so then the 70 elders next to him can also be affected by prophecy. So to hear when Shmuel got prophecy, so it's as though the dam was open, and now other people started having prophecy as well. So the Jews go out to war against the Philistines. What is the term Pilishtim? Pilishtim? Do we have a Tanakh here? No, okay. Oh, we have a Navi here. So,
do you want a Tanakh?
No, it's okay. It says, in Chronicles, in Divrei Hayamim, it describes many nations. One of the nations is Pilishtim. And over there in Chronicles, the commentary that's written with the heading Rashi is not Rashi. At some point in Chronicles, he actually quotes Rashi. So that's a dead giveaway. It wasn't Rashi, right? You could laugh, but it's true. Somewhere in Chronicles, he does quote Rashi. But whoever the commentator was down there, so he writes that Pilishtim comes from the word Plishtei Yam. Plishtim is a conjunction of two words, Plishtei Yam. And Plishtim, the modern archaeologists say, were a nation that would break into other nations' territory and conquer. Pileshet, Liflosh, is to breach forward. So the Philistines are going out to war, and the Jews lose the first battle. They lost 4,000 men. And they asked the elders, what happened? Let's take the ark. In every other war, they would take one Aron with them. Now they were taking the ark with the tablets. They had an ark that went out to war with them. This was a second ark the ark, the one with the kruvim, the ones with the tablets, and they take it, and they bring it with the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Pinchas. And when the Aron comes to the camps, everyone blows their trumpets, and they say, that's it, we're going to win. And the Philistines get scared when they hear what's going on. And then they say, that's it, God is with them now. That's the Aron that did all the wonderful feats. They've never done this before. They've taken out their secret weapon. How are we ever going to stand up to them? Their God is so awesome. That's the God that hit the Egyptians. We have to strengthen ourselves, because otherwise we can end up being their slaves. So they go to war, and they redouble their efforts, and they are victorious. And along comes a young man named Goliath, and runs up to the Aron, and kills Hophni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli. And then opens up the Aron and takes out the tablets. And he says, ha, you Jews say God made these. And I have them in my hand. You say they're from Moshe. And a young man who is also very tall and very brave from the tribe of Benjamin, named Shaul, Saul, runs up to him and says, no, you don't. And grabs it out of his hands, grabs the luchos out of his hands. Goliath, he's a pretty big soldier. You know, his spear was like the size of a loom, the beam of a loom. His spear was so big that it took a bunch of people to hold it. But Shaul was so brave that he ran up to him single-handedly and swooped the luchos out of his hands and ran and continued running. And he ran all the way to the camp in Shiloh. And everyone hears, everyone asks him, what happened? And he says, we lost. And the Aron was captured. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Pinchas, were killed. And when he mentions that, so everyone goes wailing and mourning, and they're right. They don't realize it, but in a few minutes, the Philistine camp is going to catch up with Saul and destroy Shiloh. Meaning we had, Shiloh was the temple was there at that time. And in a few minutes, shortly after Shaul runs away from the camp, the Philistines catch up with Shiloh and destroy the camp and destroy the temple of Hashem at Shiloh. And when Eli hears everyone yelling, he's been sitting there, he's 98 years old, and he's been waiting to hear what's going on, he can't see well. So Shaul runs over to him, it is his two sons that have been killed, and he says, you know, I've run away from the camp today. And Eli asks him what happened, and he says, the Jews ran. And our rule is, this pasuk teaches us, they ran, and then many, many were killed. So from here the halacha derives that at a time of war, you're not allowed to run. You're not allowed to be scared. And at a time of war, if a general sees someone trying to run, he's allowed to cut off his legs. Because if he runs, he's endangering everyone. Because if one person runs from the battlefront, then everyone will think, hey, we're losing. So then everyone will retreat, and then you really lose, because that's what happened here. They began running, and because they began running, so many people were killed, and your two sons, Hophni and Pinchas, died, and the Aron, the ark, was captured. So he held out until he heard about the ark. When he heard about the ark, he fell over. He was sitting on a chair without a back. And that's why some people are careful never to sit on a chair without a back. Because he fell over. He was a heavy man. And he broke his neck and died. So he died on the same day as his sons. And he had been judged for 40 years. So at this point, Shmuel is 39 years old, I guess, because Shmuel was born a year after Eli took his position. So if Eli has been judged for 40 years, remember, it was Eli's first day at the temple when he met Hannah and gave her that prophetic vision and gave her that blessing that Hashem should allow her to conceive. So she had a child a year later. If he was judged for 40 years, that means 40 years ago is when he gave that blessing. So Shmuel is 39 years old. So even though we're going to learn a lot about Shmuel, everything that's going to happen with Shmuel will take place in the next 13 years. Because Shmuel passes away at the age of 52. And right now, Shmuel is 39. His daughter-in-law, Pinchas's wife, was in the middle of giving birth. And when she heard what happened, so everything went out of whack, and she bled to death. Now, one of the things you have to know, and you'll have to be intelligent about how you tell your wives this, is that one of the key factors to having a safe childbirth, to having a safe delivery, is to maintain control. Sometimes the nurse says push, and sometimes the nurse says don't push. And if you push, when she says don't push, then a woman could tear herself in half. You know, there are times when the opening is dilated and it's not dilated, and there's times when there's a contraction and not a contraction. A woman has to work with the nurse to know when to push. There's a reason why there are midwives. Yeah, there are times that women give birth without a midwife and everything goes well. But then there are times like here, where she panicked when she heard that the ark was taken. She heard her husband died. But when she heard the ark was taken, that devastated her. We see how pious these people were. And so she named the son, as she was bleeding to death, she called the son E Chavod, lack of honor. She said, we lost the ark, there's no more honor in Israel. We've lost it all. Okay, yes, Daniel. That's in theory, but what happens when the guy sees the person next to him killed and the guy next to him killed? In theory, everyone's brave.
That's not the thing that people are scared to go into the army. So you think that that will be rolled out?
No. Everyone's scared. The question is, do you take control of the fear or does the fear take control of you? It's not that brave people aren't scared. Any intelligent person is scared. The Rambam says, there's a misconception. People think bravery is when a person's not scared. It's, you charge, and that's sometimes stupidity. There's what to be scared.
It would be like if somebody made a theological profile of a person, say, you know, this person is not fit to...
But it's not always panic. Sometimes my logic says run, because my life could be in danger. But the general has to think about the broader picture and what's right for the whole army and the whole people. So a person's own calculation might be dead right, excuse the pun.
Second.
You know, that's part of the responsibility of being in an army. You have to work as a unit.
Jackson.
Hey. Yes.
Hi. It's a good old Confederacy.
That's right. If anybody in Israel approached it and took up the loophole, I don't think they'd survive the experience.
Right.
So how was Goliath exempted from this?
Right. So Hashem wanted this to happen. That's what Hashem forewarned. He said, I'm going to do something where whoever hears it will feel like his ears are ringing. No one can fathom. You see, the Philistines and the Jews didn't believe this could happen. And that's one of the lessons we learn here. That sometimes Hashem says, when Uzzah just reaches out to touch the Aron, he drops dead. We'll still discuss that. One interpretation says he defecated in front of the Aron. We read it, and we just read the Pasuk, but if you look at the words, so then the words have dual meaning. So there are two interpretations in our tradition as to what he actually did. But let's go with the simpler interpretation. He just reached out to touch the Aron, and he dropped dead. And yet here Hashem says, Goliath is going to get away with it. And that's the idea that we see in the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk also said, how could you hide yourself, Hashem? Sometimes you let the wicked get away with so much. It's like when they were destroying the temple, it's the parochet would have blood in it because they sprinkled the blood on Yom Kippur. So at one point they put a sword through the parochet and they saw blood come out. So they said, you see, we killed the God of Israel. And that's one of the messages we see again and again in Tanakh, that sometimes Hashem steps forward and says, here I am and don't you dare. And sometimes Hashem says, I'm not getting involved. I'm gonna let this play itself out. So now let's see how Hashem lets it play itself out. But that is one of the difficulties. But it's a difficulty that the Tanakh presents us with. You know, when David fights the four kings, so our tradition is that he could throw sand and it turns into spears, right? And yet, when his own wife is abducted, so he seems powerless. You could take on the four most powerful kings of the planet, but you cannot take on the Egyptian king when he abducts your wife, or the king of Plishtim. So Hashem gets into the picture, but you see, Hashem let Avram cook a little bit. Avram and Sarah. And that's one of the things we see in Tanakh, that Hashem does not always show us his answer. I said it on last week's parasha. We say, Aaron lost his two sons, and Aaron was silent. Well, you know what? Hashem was also silent. Aaron was silent. That's Aaron's greatness, that Aaron didn't say anything, even though he felt very badly about it. But notice what Hashem says. Hashem doesn't say, gee, Aaron, I feel bad for you. Hashem says, everyone else is going to cry over this, and Aaron, I want you to be careful not to enter the Holy of Holies drunk. Wait a second. He just lost his two sons. Okay, so that parsha needs analysis, but that's a recurring theme in Tanakh. The deafening silence from above, where Avram is forced to face the challenges of life, and Hashem doesn't offer any explanations, or the explanations are late in coming. First, you have to deal with the challenge. So they're late from our perspective, but from Hashem's perspective, that's life. So the Philistines take the ark, and they bring him to the city of Ashdod, that's on the west bank, right? Ashdod is all the way to the west, where Philistine territory is. And they bring him into their temple of Dagon. Dagon was half man, half fish. And they said, being that our God conquered their God, so let their God serve before our God. And they bring him into the temple of Dagon. They come the next morning, and they see Dagon falling, bowing before the Aaron. So they say, gee, must be a coincidence, right? So they set him on his pedestal a little bit better. They set their god Dagon, and they come the next morning, and they see the body falling before the ark, and the hands and the feet and the head, the hands and the head are cut off of Dagon, and they're on the doorstep. So what do the Philistines say? No more stepping on that doorstep. It's holy. Right? What? No. I'm serious. They sanctify the doorstep. And then the Philistines start having trouble doing their needs. And throughout Ashdod, people have constipation to the point where they're getting sick. And they say, wait, this isn't normal. This wasn't going on before. And people are getting sicker and sicker and sicker until they say, get that one out of here because he's punishing us too badly. And so they call the elders and they say, what are we supposed to do? And they say, send them to the city of Gat, another city on the southwest border of Israel. So they bring it to Gat. And again, in the city of Gat, people start getting tremendously ill. And they start having tremendous constipation. And so they send the Aaron to the city of Ekron, another Philistine city. And the people of Ekron say, you guys are all dying, so you send me the Aaron? No way! Send them back! We can't deal with it. We don't want to all die. So the city of Ekron has the same problem. Now what would happen is wherever the Aaron would go, people would have tremendous constipation and they spend a long time in the bathroom not getting too far. And Hashem sent these rodents that would come in through the pits that they used as bathrooms and they would start biting out their lower intestines. And so people were dying. And after 7 months of people dying throughout Philistine territory, the Philistines gather their priests and their sorcerers and they ask them, what are we supposed to do? How do we get rid of this Aaron? Well, let's send them back, but we're in danger. Now, imagine what you have here. You have this solid gold chest with gold handles, gold that none of them could produce such fine gold. You have these angels on top. So it was very tempting to hold on to such a masterpiece. But they say, send them back with gifts, and you'll send figurines of the body parts that got constipated and the mice that were destroying the country, and then maybe he'll forgive you. And don't harden your heart. But experiment. Take a new wagon, take two young cows that never drew a wagon, and place their mothers, tie them up behind, and see if they go. Take the mothers and tie their kids up behind and see if the mothers take the wagon. And you'll put the Aaron on the wagon with the golden offerings and you'll see if it goes up to Beit Shemesh. Beit Shemesh is the city that's close to the Philistine territory. That's why in Beit Shemesh you have cities that are named very similar to the Philistine cities. So you'll see. So they put the Aaron and they take another ark and they put gold mice and these figurines of their body parts, and the mother cows go as though they're singing up to Beit Shemesh, they go straight path up to bring back the Aaron. And when they see that, so they're happy. The people of Beit Shemesh see the Aaron, and they rejoice, and they say, gee, you're God, aren't you? So what happened that you punished us and you left us? And what did we do right that you suddenly came back? So they all started talking disrespectfully. They said, if that's Hashem, then how did the Philistines conquer him? And how come now he suddenly showed his might and he came back? So 50,070 men die in Beit Shemesh. There's a plague in Beit Shemesh too. So the people of Beit Shemesh said, we can't handle this. So they send to Kiryat Yarim, which they say is just out of Jerusalem, Telstone. They tell them, we want the Aron Bayou. The Philistines brought it back. So they come and they bring the Aron up, and they leave it by a man named Avinadav, who is blessed that his wife and all his daughters-in-law, they each have 6 kids apiece. They're all blessed by the Aron being there, because he treats it with proper respect. And Shmuel gathers the Jewish people to do a mass tshuva. And he says, the first thing you have to do is remove the idol worship, and then you'll be saved from the Philistines. So they start removing the different idols they have in their midst. They had Ashtarot, which were trees that were planted with an idol underneath, and they'd worship the tree and the idol underneath. They had Be'alim, which was a type of idol worship where they believed Hashem is above, but there are all kinds of little masters. Ba'al, master of fertility and master of the crops, and they worship them as well. And so now Shmuel gathers the people and they pray, and now they're getting ready for war with the Philistines. And that's where we're going to pick up, where the Jews start panicking as they see the Philistines approach, and they ask Shmuel, now what? So we'll pick up here, Bez Hashem, next week.